Well, it is good to be together again on this first day of the week. Thankful for all of the worship that we've already been able to engage in together and for the Bible study and for each of your presence that's here. It's good to see our regular members. It's good to see visitors. And whether you come from near or far, it's good to have you here with us. And we are encouraged by each one's presence. This morning, I will be talking about the wisdom of Solomon. The United Kingdom of Israel lasted for 120 years, and it was governed by three different kings who each reigned for 40 years apiece. The first was Saul, the son of Kish. Second was David, the son of Jesse. And third was David's son, Solomon. And it was during Solomon's reign that the United Kingdom of Israel reached its zenith. His kingship was characterized by unprecedented prosperity and peace and glory. He created a fleet of ships to engage in extensive trade with foreign nations. He built the temple and all of its magnificence. He organized elaborate sacrifices and feasts dedicated to serving and worshiping God. And yet, for all of that, what Solomon is probably best known for is his wisdom. And that's for good reason. What we call the wisdom literature in the Bible is largely written by Solomon. Most all of Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, and the Song of Songs are attributed to him. And it was, in fact, the wisdom of Solomon that ushered in this golden age of Israel's history. And so this morning, I'd like for us to consider what we should learn from Solomon's wisdom. We'll consider the extent of his wisdom, the beginning of his wisdom, and the limit of his wisdom. So the extent, the beginning, and the limit. So first, let's talk about just how wise a man Solomon was. And we'll look at some references here in the book of 1 Kings. And if you'd like to follow along, you can open your Bibles. But the first demonstration of Solomon's wisdom is probably the one that he's most famous for in 1 Kings chapter 3, verses 16 to 28. The Bible tells us that there were two women who came to Solomon because of a disagreement that they had. They were both prostitutes, and they lived in the same house. Both of them had babies. But one night, one of their babies died. And one woman was alleging that the other woman had actually rolled over on her baby during the night and swapped them before she woke up. And so both women come to bring their case before Solomon. And I want you to see what he says, picking up here in verse 24. The king said, "Bring me a sword." So a sword was brought to the king. And the king said, "Divide the living child in two and give half to the one and half to the other." Then the woman whose son was alive said to the king, because her heart yearned for her son, "Oh, my lord, give her the living child and by no means put him to death." But the other said, "He shall be neither mine nor yours. Divide him." Then the king answered and said, "Give the living child to the first woman, and by no means put him to death. She is his mother." And all Israel heard of the judgment that the king had rendered, and they stood in awe of the king, because they perceived that the wisdom of God was in him to do justice. It's interesting that this is the first demonstration of Solomon's wisdom in the book, and it really shows us that his wisdom included an understanding of human psychology. He understood something about human nature. Solomon was able to perceive something about this situation and know how to handle it in a way that would reveal the truth, because he understood the way people think. He understood the way that people's minds work. Have you ever known people who had wisdom like that? Sometimes people have the ability to understand human nature and human thoughts and human emotions in a way that seems to transcend other people's understandings. When you talk to somebody like that, you might get the sense that they understand you even better than you understand yourself. Sometimes wise people know just what to say, just what to ask that reveals the truth inside of you. They can be very perceptive. And Solomon's wisdom was like that. But if you look over to chapter 4 of 1 Kings, you see more information about his wisdom and the effect it had on people. Look in 1 Kings chapter 4 and verse 20. It says, Judah and Israel were as many as the sand by the sea. They ate and drank and were happy. Solomon ruled over all the kingdoms from the Euphrates to the land of the Philistines and to the border of Egypt. They brought tribute and served Solomon all the days of his life. Solomon's provision for one day was 30 cores of fine flour and 60 cores of meal, 10 fat oxen and 20 pasture-fed cattle, 100 sheep besides deer, gazelles, roebucks, and fattened fowl. For he had dominion over all the region west of the Euphrates, from Tipsah to Gaza, over all the kings west of the Euphrates, and he had peace on all sides around him. And Judah and Israel lived in safety, from Dan even to Beersheba, every man under his vine and under his fig tree, all the days of Solomon. Here you see the kind of effect that Solomon's wisdom had on people around him. And I like how it tells us in verse 20 that the people of Israel and Judah ate and were happy. Solomon's wisdom benefited the people who associated with him, and because he was the king, his wisdom benefited everybody in the kingdom. He was able to create this environment of peace and happiness that was attractive and pleasant. Have you ever known people like that? There are some people who, because of their wisdom, just sort of seem to live a charmed life. It's like everything that they do is successful. They often have successful careers. They often are able to achieve good things in their life. But when they have this kind of wisdom, it becomes sort of a magnetic thing. People just like being around them. People benefit from being in their company. They tend to have happy families, happy friendships. I get the sense that Solomon was kind of like that too. Drop down to verse 29 of 1 Kings 4. It says in verse 29, God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding beyond measure and breadth of mind like the sand on the seashore, so that Solomon's wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all the people of the east and all the wisdom of Egypt. For he was wiser than all other men, wiser than Ethan the Ezrahite, and Heman, Chalcol, and Darda, the sons of Mahol, and his fame was in all the surrounding nations. He also spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. He spoke of trees, from the cedar that is in Lebanon to the hyssop that grows out of the wall. He spoke also of beasts and of birds and of reptiles and of fish. And people of all nations came to hear the wisdom of Solomon, and from all the kings of the earth who had heard of his wisdom. These verses help us to understand that Solomon's wisdom was very broad. He understood a lot of things about a lot of things, and he was able to talk about them in an informed kind of way. Reminds me a little bit of walking through the woods with my grandfather. He was the kind of man who could identify all kinds of different trees and plants, and he could tell you about things that they were used for and what types of animals like to eat them. And I always found it fascinating to just walk through the woods with him and ask him what that was or what this was and listen to his wisdom about the trees. But Solomon was able to speak with authority on more than just trees and plants. I would have loved to hear Solomon's thoughts about turtles, salamanders. Apparently he had some ideas about that. But Solomon was somebody who was constantly studying the world around him. And not only was his interest in science and biology, but he thought poetically. He wrote songs. He wrote proverbs. Seems like a real Renaissance man, very well-rounded in all these ways. But now go to 1 Kings chapter 10. 1 Kings chapter 10, we have this encounter with the Queen of Sheba. And it says here in verse 1 that when the Queen of Sheba heard the fame of Solomon concerning the name of the Lord, she came to test him with hard questions. She came to Jerusalem with a great retinue, with camels bearing spices and very much gold and precious stones. And when she came to Solomon, she told him all that was on her mind. And Solomon answered all her questions. There was nothing hidden from the king that he could not explain to her. And when the Queen of Sheba had seen all the wisdom of Solomon, the house that he had built, the food of his table, the seating of his officials, and the attendance of his servants, their clothing, his cupbearers, and his burnt offerings that he offered at the house of the Lord, there was no more breath in her. And she said to the king, "The report was true that I heard in my own land of your words and of your wisdom, but I did not believe the reports until I came and my own eyes had seen it. And behold, the half was not told me. Your wisdom and prosperity surpassed the report that I heard. Happy are your men, happy are your servants, who continually stand before you and hear your wisdom. Blessed be the Lord your God, who has delighted in you and set you on the throne of Israel. Because the Lord loved Israel forever, he has made you king, that you may execute justice and righteousness." So the reports of Solomon's wisdom apparently spread so far that there are foreign dignitaries that are coming to check it out for themselves. And among them is this Queen of the South, or Queen of Sheba. And she comes preparing her hard questions for Solomon. I wonder what kinds of questions she had written down on her notepad. I don't know if these were factual questions, you know, trying to stump him with like Jeopardy type stuff, or if these were logical questions, like riddles, you know, where she was trying to trick him with some kind of puzzle of words, or maybe they were philosophical questions or existential questions about the meaning of life and the nature of things and the kinds of questions that people grow old studying about and writing about and thinking about. But whatever kinds of hard questions she had, she comes to Solomon and she sits down and she just hammers him one after the other, and he answers them over and over again. And it says that Solomon literally took her breath away. In verse 5, it says there was no more breath left in her. And so finally she exclaims, "You're even more impressive than I imagined. I didn't believe that it could be true that somebody could be so wise, and yet now I see that you're twice as wise as I ever even dared to imagine you would be. Your people are blessed to have you leading them." And apparently this kind of thing happens over and over again. If you look down in 1 Kings 10 and verse 23, it tells us, "Thus King Solomon excelled all the kings of the earth in riches and in wisdom. And the whole earth sought the presence of Solomon to hear his wisdom, which God had put into his mind. Every one of them brought his present, articles of silver and gold, garments, myrrh, spices, horses, and mules, so much year by year." Have you ever noticed how often wise people are consulted for advice? Generally, people who have true wisdom don't have to go around begging people to listen to them. They don't have to go around insisting that people hear their words. Usually, they're the kind of people who, when they speak, people know to pay attention. And they often have people who come to them asking for counsel and asking for advice. And that was Solomon's life. He had people constantly coming to him, asking him questions, asking him for counsel about their situations. Except for Solomon, it wasn't just family and friends and co-workers. It was kings and world leaders. So imagine if your phone was constantly ringing and it was presidents and prime ministers who were calling to ask for advice. In fact, many of them would probably benefit from asking for some more advice. But the point is, Solomon was the guy that they knew to go to. What an impressive man Solomon was. I think it would have been fascinating to sit down with Solomon and just hear his thoughts on all these different things as he shared the wisdom that he had. But the question becomes, how does somebody become so wise? How does somebody rise to the level of wisdom that Solomon had? Well, 1 Kings 10:24, which we just read, told us that God was the one who put wisdom into his mind. And if you've studied the story of Solomon before, you know exactly what that's referencing. In the scripture reading, we had 2 Chronicles chapter 1, where we see the record there of Solomon's conversation with God and God granting him the request of wisdom. But I'd like for us to see it now in 1 Kings chapter 3. So if you would, go back to 1 Kings 3, and we'll see the wisdom that Solomon gained from the Lord here. In 1 Kings 3, it tells us in verse 3, Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of David his father. And it tells us that while he was making sacrifices at Gibeon, that the Lord appeared to him in a dream. And the Lord asks him, "What shall I give you?" He actually says, "Ask, what shall I give you?" Could you imagine God showing up and giving you a blank check? You know, it's almost like a genie type situation, you know. You have one wish. What do you wish for? You can't ask for more wishes. It'd be tempting to ask for a lot of different things. But this is Solomon's answer in verse 6. 1 Kings 3 and verse 6. Solomon said, "You have shown great and steadfast love to your servant David, my father, because he walked before you in faithfulness, in righteousness, and in uprightness of heart toward you. And you have kept for him this great and steadfast love and have given him a son to sit on his throne this day. And now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of David, my father, although I am but a little child. I do not know how to go out or come in. And your servant is in the midst of your people whom you have chosen, a great people, too many to be numbered or counted for multitude. Give your servant, therefore, an understanding mind to govern your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to govern this, your great people?" Now, in 2 Chronicles chapter 1, it says that Solomon actually asked for wisdom. And 1 Kings chapter 3 is telling us the same thing, except here it doesn't use the word wisdom. The word that Solomon uses here is the word discernment. In verse 9, he says, "Give your servant, therefore, an understanding mind to govern your people, that I may discern between good and evil." And essentially, that is what wisdom is. It's being able to accurately discern between what is good and evil, between what's helpful and unhelpful, between what is right and wrong. And Solomon knows that of all of the things that he could ask for, that would be the most important thing. It's a pretty good answer. And God is impressed with his answer. In fact, as you keep reading in verses 10 through 14, God tells him, "I'm pleased with your answer. I'm glad that you asked for wisdom instead of riches or honor. And so because of that, I'll give you the wisdom that you asked for as well as the riches and honor that will follow it." But it's also a pretty wise answer, isn't it? From the very beginning, Solomon had the wisdom to desire wisdom. He had the discernment to discern how to answer this question. I think that's pretty interesting too. And he had the wisdom to accept the wisdom that came from God. So notice this. First of all, Solomon had the wisdom to know that wisdom is the desirable thing, and he had the wisdom to accept that God is the source of wisdom. Solomon actually wrote about both of those things in the book of Proverbs. True wisdom comes by recognizing the value of wisdom and accepting the wisdom that comes from God. And two different times in the book of Proverbs, Solomon tells us this is the beginning of wisdom. First of all, I want you to see it in Proverbs chapter 4. Proverbs chapter 4. Start reading here in verse 3. When I was a son with my father, tender, the only one in the sight of my mother, he taught me and said to me, "Let your heart hold fast my words, keep my commandments, and live. Get wisdom, get insight. Do not forget and do not turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her, and she will keep you. Love her, and she will guard you. The beginning of wisdom is this: get wisdom, and whatever you get, get insight. Prize her highly, and she will exalt you. She will honor you if you embrace her. She will place on your head a graceful garland. She will bestow on you a beautiful crown." Okay, so did you notice that as Solomon is writing this for us, that he's actually recounting some advice that he got from his father? It tells us that there in verse 3. When I was a son with my father, tender, the only one in the sight of my mother, he taught me and said these things to me. So in the book of Proverbs, we've actually got some words from David. These are things that David told Solomon when he was a little boy. And Solomon's advice, or David's advice to Solomon, is that the beginning of wisdom is this, in verse 7. Get wisdom. And at first, that sounds really confusing, you know? It's like, okay, well, that's kind of the whole point. That's what I'm after here. How do I get wisdom? Well, the beginning of wisdom is get wisdom. What does that mean? Well, it sounds confusing, but it's actually really good advice. Because I think that what David is instilling is in Solomon is a recognition that wisdom itself is desirable. He's instilling in him the wisdom to want wisdom. Solomon, if you're ever going to be wise, if you're ever going to understand the world around you, if you're ever going to be able to have the discernment to make good decisions, the first thing you have to do is you have to want it. You have to desire it. You have to realize the value of wisdom. And I don't think that Solomon ever forgot that. I think that's why he was constantly studying the world around him. He was constantly observing the way things work. He was constantly reflecting and thinking about it. He was reading and he was writing. He was even bringing the world to himself. Some of the verses that we didn't read in 1 Kings talk about how these ships would go out and they would bring back all kinds of animals. You know, there would be apes and baboons and peacocks. It was like Solomon had his own little zoo where the world was brought to him. He was fascinated by everything that God had made. And he realized that learning and growing and understanding was the way to truly function at his best. Solomon was a student at heart, and so his wisdom began with a desire for wisdom. And I think that's really good advice for all of us, is that if any of us are going to become wise, it starts with realizing that wisdom is important, that wisdom is valuable, and so we apply ourselves to pursuing it. But now look at Proverbs chapter 9. Proverbs chapter 9. This is what Solomon writes in verses 9 through 12. Give instruction to a wise man, and he will still be wiser. Teach a righteous man, and he will increase in learning. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is insight. For by me your days will be multiplied, and years will be added to your life. If you are wise, you are wise for yourself. If you scoff, you alone will bear it. If you remember in 1 Kings 3, when God came to Solomon and asked him, "Ask, what shall I give you?" Solomon not only asked for wisdom, but he explained his reason for wanting it. He said, "God, you have given me this great task, this great responsibility, and I realize that I can't do it on my own. I am depending on you to give me the discretion and the insight and the guidance to be able to do your will most effectively." The humility that Solomon demonstrated in that conversation is the fear of the Lord. He realized that it wasn't in himself to know the difference between right and wrong, but the only way that he could do that effectively was to lean hard on the wisdom of God, to accept it, to embrace it, to follow him in all his ways. And so think about what Solomon is telling us. This very wise man who had wisdom that was so famous that it drew in all the kings and queens of the earth, he's saying, my wisdom begins in this way. It begins with desiring wisdom, and it begins with the fear of the Lord. It's recognizing the value of wisdom, and it's accepting the wisdom that comes from God. And while Solomon may not have ever forgotten the first part, sadly, it's the second part that he did seem to forget. And so the last part of this lesson is the limit of Solomon's wisdom. Solomon's wisdom was so impressive in so many ways. But if you go back and read his story again, you actually begin to notice some cracks in his wisdom. 1 Kings chapter 5, verses 13 to 18, tells us that when Solomon started building the temple, that he put the Israelites to forced labor. It describes how he drafted 30,000 Israelites to work in 3 one-month shifts of 10,000 each. And as you're reading through that, you think, that sounds a little bit disconcerting. And if you know your Bible very well, you'll think back to some of Samuel's warnings about kings in 1 Samuel chapter 8. Remember when the people of Israel first vocalized their desire for a king, and Samuel warned them about, if you get a king, here's all of the bad things that he'll do. 1 Samuel chapter 8, verses 10 to 18, Samuel warns the people that if you have a king, he'll take your sons and your daughters, and he'll put them to forced labor. He'll make them his slaves, essentially. And so maybe that's a little bit disconcerting there. But then, as we continue to read about Solomon's reign and what he accomplishes, 1 Kings 6 and verse 38 tells us that he worked on the temple for 7 years. But then the very next verse, in chapter 7 and verse 1, tells us that he worked on his own house for 13 years. And maybe still, at this point, you're thinking, okay, we can withhold judgment. You know, maybe it was just because he saw the work on the temple to be more urgent, and so he was more quick at working on it. But then you start to read about his house, and it's a very elaborate and extravagant house that he builds for himself. And so maybe that's a sign of his shifting priorities. In fact, in 1 Kings chapter 9, verses 1 to 9, the Lord appears to Solomon a second time. And in the second time that the Lord appears to Solomon, he warns him about becoming unfaithful. He warns him about a bad path of going into idolatry and no longer trusting in the Lord. It reminds me a little bit of the way that the Lord appeared to Cain and warned him in Genesis 4 about how sin was crouching at the door, but his responsibility was to rule over it. But then, as you get to 1 Kings chapter 10, the cracks begin to deepen. Starting in verse 14, we're told of all the gold that Solomon accumulated for himself. It says that every year he brought in 666 talents. That amounts to 25 tons of gold year by year. It's roughly $3 billion. It talks about how he made 500 decorative gold shields. He overlaid his throne with gold. Every cup in his house was made of pure gold. Starting in verse 26, we're told of all the horses that he accumulated for himself. And it even talks about how he imported them from Egypt. And then, in 1 Kings 11, we're told of all the women that he accumulated for himself. 700 wives, 300 concubines. And he let them turn his heart to foreign gods. And it's like at this point that the author of 1 Kings can restrain himself no longer. He's been just sort of objectively reporting some of these things that Solomon has done. But then it says in 1 Kings 11 and verse 6, "So Solomon did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, and did not follow the Lord as David his father had done." And from this point, the Lord begins to tear the kingdom away from Solomon. He raises up adversaries. He vows to give 10 of the 12 tribes to the house of Jeroboam. The kingdom would be divided, and idolatry would plague the people for centuries. Now, what's interesting is that way back in Deuteronomy chapter 17, Moses had warned of exactly the mistakes that Solomon made. If you go to Deuteronomy 17, look at what Moses says here in verses 14 to 17. "When you come to the land that the Lord your God is giving you, and you possess it and dwell in it, and then say, 'I will set a king over me like all the nations that are around me,' you may indeed set a king over you whom the Lord your God will choose. One from among your brothers you shall set as king over you. You must not put a foreigner over you who is not your brother. Only he must not acquire many horses for himself or cause the people to return to Egypt in order to acquire many horses. Since the Lord has said to you, 'You shall never return that way again.' And he shall not acquire many wives for himself, lest his heart turn away. Nor shall he acquire for himself excessive silver and gold." Isn't it interesting that Solomon does all three things that Moses warned about? He acquires excessive gold. He acquires excessive horses, even going to Egypt to get them. He acquires excessive wives. And it's because of that that his heart turns away from the Lord, just like Moses warned. But look at what Moses goes on to say in verse 18. It says, "And when he sits on the throne of his kingdom, he shall write for himself in a book a copy of this law, approved by the Levitical priest, and it shall be with him, and he shall read it all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God by keeping all the words of this law and these statutes and doing them, that his heart may not be lifted up above his brothers, that he may not turn aside from the commandments, either to the right hand or to the left, so that he may continue long in his kingdom, he and his children in Israel." I wonder if Solomon actually did what Moses said the kings should do. I wonder if Solomon had actually written for himself a copy of the law. The Bible doesn't say one way or the other. If he didn't, he should have. And if he did, he probably should have read his copy a few more times. And then maybe he would have learned to fear the Lord his God by keeping all the words of this law and these statutes and doing them. Maybe then his heart would not have become lifted up, and he would have continued long in his kingdom to the blessing of all his people. There's so much that we can acquire, that we can admire about Solomon. We can admire the wisdom that he had and the love for wisdom that he demonstrated. But ultimately, Solomon's story to us is a warning. That no matter how much wisdom that we have, no matter how much we want wisdom, that apart from the fear of the Lord, wisdom itself is self-defeating. If our hearts are not wholly dedicated to the Lord, we can be the wisest and most prosperous people and still act foolishly. But I want you to imagine if Solomon had been a king whose wisdom had not failed. Imagine if Solomon had all of these impressive qualities that we've been reading about, but he had remained fully dedicated to serving the Lord with all of his heart. What kind of king would he have been like? Well, you don't have to imagine, because that's Jesus. You know, when Jesus walked the earth, Jesus often spoke in Proverbs. Jesus understood human nature and human hearts better than anybody else did. He could ask exactly the right question to reveal the truth inside of somebody. Jesus brought joy and blessings to everybody who sat at his feet and listened to his words. Jesus answered all the hard questions that people brought to him. Jesus even built the temple in the most ultimate sense. But Jesus never put anyone to forced labor. Jesus invites people to freely follow him and take his yoke for ourselves. Jesus never acquired excessive gold for himself. He was poor and homeless. Jesus never acquired excessive horses. He rode the foal of a donkey. Jesus never acquired excessive wives. His only bride is the church, and he remains faithful to her. Jesus remained fully dedicated to doing the will of the Lord all of his life, even when that meant going to the cross and dying for the sins of the world. The true wise king is Jesus, and his wisdom has no limit. Paul tells us in Colossians that in him are hidden all the treasures of wisdom and knowledge. And in fact, Jesus said of himself in Matthew 12:42, "The queen of the south will rise up at the judgment with this generation and condemn it. For she came from the ends of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon, and behold, something greater than Solomon is here." As great as Solomon was, the gospel shows us that the greater Solomon has come. And the question for us is whether or not we recognize him. Do we have a heart that realizes the value of wisdom? And do we have a heart that's willing to accept the wisdom that comes from God? The beginning of wisdom is this: get wisdom. And the beginning of wisdom is to fear the Lord. The queen of the south came from the ends of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon. And today, you're holding in your hands the wisdom of Jesus. The question that comes to us is what we will do with him. So the invitation that I want to leave you with this morning is to make the decision to come into the Lord's service. Not because he's forcing you, but because you see his wisdom. You understand the blessings that come from following him. And even if it's hard, even when it requires sacrifice, that you want to take his yoke and place it on your neck. Take up your cross and follow him. The greater Solomon is here. The wisdom of all the kings before him points to Jesus. He is the one to follow. If you need to become a Christian this morning, you have the opportunity to do that. And if there's some kind of spiritual need that we can help you with, we would encourage you to let us know that as well. Please come to the front while we stand and sing.